the afternoon on Radio 3. Do stay tuned for the early music show in just a moment. You can discover the music of the 18th century French composer and keyboard virtuoso Claude Balbastre. The harpsichord player Sophie Yates is Lucy Skeeping's guest. But now, with the time at 1 o'clock, a summary of the news this lunchtime. It's read by David Cornett.
Syrian state television has reported heavy fighting between government forces and armed opposition groups in the northern town of Jisr al-Shagour. Reports say at least two gunmen have been killed, with many more arrested. Anti-government activists say troops attacked the town with tanks and helicopter gunships this morning. The government says it's moved into the town to restore order after 120 security personnel were killed a week ago. Civilians have been fleeing to refugee camps in neighbouring Turkey. The International Monetary Fund has confirmed that it's investigating an attack on its computer system. The FBI is looking into the security breach, which occurred over the course of several months this year. One report says hackers have been trying to install software which would allow a country to look inside the IMF's network. At least 34 people have been killed in a bomb attack on a market in Peshawar in northwestern Pakistan. A small explosion drew a crowd of onlookers who were then caught in a much bigger second blast. Police say at least one suicide bomber was involved. An Iranian dissident has died in prison after starting a hunger strike earlier this month. Hoda Saba stopped eating in protest against the death of another opposition activist who, he said, died in suspicious circumstances. Mr. Saba was a veteran political activist who took part in the protests against President Ahmadinejad's re-election 2 years ago. There's a warning that spending cuts could plunge museums across the UK into long-term decline. Almost half of local authorities, which responded to a survey by the Museums Association, said they'd cut their workforce by at least 10% in the past year. More than a third said they were becoming more reliant on volunteers to run museums. The royal family have attended a service of thanksgiving at St George's Chapel in Windsor to mark the Duke of Edinburgh's 90th birthday. The Queen and her husband were joined by their children and grandchildren, including the newlyweds, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. And the weather, it'll remain cool with brisk winds and rain spreading across most areas of the UK. The wet weather will reach northern Scotland by tonight. BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
David, thank you very much. Sir Simon Rattle returned to his roots to conduct the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra this week. They gave a concert at this year's Aldborough Festival, up and running at the moment, playing music by Messiaen and Mahler. Magdalena Kozina joined them to sing Mahler's Das Lied von der Erde, Songs of the Earth. Well, you can hear that performance this afternoon on Radio 3. It's not to be missed. It's our Sunday concert at 2. Choral Evensong comes from Wales Cathedral this afternoon at 4, and then at 5, Stephen Johnson will be discovering more music. This week he takes his skills in forensic studies to the music of Brahms with the help of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, exploring Brahms's Fourth Symphony, which you can hear a full performance of, conducted by Jerzy Bieloklawek, from 5. But now, on Radio 3, it's time to look into the world of early music. Here's Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the Early Music Show. My guest today is the harpsichord virtuoso Sophie Yates, who earlier this year released a CD of music by Claude Bénin Balbâtre, an 18th century composer and virtuoso keyboard player himself. But before we chat to Sophie about the new disc and explore Balbâtre's life, let's hear some of his music. This is La Malesherbes, the 14th of his 1759 Pièce de Clavecin.
Thank you.
Harpsichord music by Claude Benin Balbatre, a piece entitled La Malesherbe, the 14th piece in his collection Pièces de Clavecin, published in 1759. And the performer there was Sophie Yates, and I'm delighted to say that she's with me here in the studio. Thanks very much for joining me. Now, that piece was from a disc you released earlier this year, as we were saying, of music by Balbatre. He was incredibly popular in his time, wasn't he? In fact, he was quite a celebrity with a coterie of fashionable patrons, although probably not so well known to listeners today. Is he a composer that you've been familiar with and interested in for quite a while?
Yes, I first came across him when I was researching the music of Armand Louis Couperin, his contemporary and friend, in fact, and I became rather interested in this later 18th century French repertoire, also because I was looking at a programme around the musical life of Casanova.
Oh, is that as interesting as it sounds?
Yes.
Now, Balbatre had a long career, and stylistically, his music seems to just sort of fit in between the end of the Baroque and the beginning of the classical or the Rococo era. In fact, the piece we've just heard seems to have an almost Mozartian opening to it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, with the left hand, with the Alberti bass, the broken chord figure that goes through. And Balbatre's style is very interesting because he does look back to the Baroque and forward to the classical.
Tell me a little about the Pièce de Clavecin you've recorded. It's a collection, isn't it?
Yes, it's like a portrait gallery, really, of his patrons and friends. And it's quite fascinating to imagine the characters behind these pieces.
In fact, the first piece we heard just now, La Malesherbe, was apparently named after some important librarian, wasn't it?
That's right. And a bust of him is in the Louvre. And yet the piece ends with this absolutely bacchanalian air.
Oh,
which is quite...
It might have been a secret drinker.
Yes.
You see, that's the way you get in the information subtly. And this next piece we're going to hear also sounds as if it refers to a particular person. I'm presuming a woman, because it's called La Suzanne.
Well, not necessarily, because the La sometimes just refers to La Pièce. Sometimes, though, it is a female dedicatee, so it's a little bit difficult to tell. In this case, it's Claude Louis Suzanne, the sculptor and painter, we think.
Thank you.
La Suzanne, who was a man, by Claude Benin-Barbatre, and it's subtitled Noble and Animated, or perhaps I should say lively. I presume that was referring to his character in some way. And that was the harpsichordist Sophie Yates, who's my studio guest today. Sophie, I love the sort of lifestyle Barbatre seems to have enjoyed. It sounds as if he knew absolutely everyone on the fashionable Parisian scene, and he was always performing at parties, wasn't he, where he often, I think, met people who would help him in some way.
Yes, absolutely. This is the late 18th century French networking, really, that went on. There was a particularly important patron, musical patron, Monsieur Riche de la Pouplinière, who was something very important in the French Inland Revenue at the time.
Definitely a man to suck up to, then.
Yes, absolutely. Patron of Rameau. And Rameau heard Balbat playing a version of his overture to Pygmalion at the Salon of La Pouplinière and was apparently very impressed.
Now, Pygmalion was Rameau's, was a sort of opera ballet, wasn't it?
That's right.
In those days they were a
That's
bit interchangeable.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
That was a bit of a nerve to sit down in front of the composer and play an arrangement of his piece.
Yes, absolutely. I suppose it's the same as a popular song nowadays from a musical or show or something being turned into a version for keyboard, but it was happening then.
Let's hear that now, as one imagines Barbatre might have played it at the Salon.
Thank you.
was music from Rameau's Acte de Ballet on the Pygmalion fable. It was, in fact, the overture arranged for solo harpsichord by Balbâtre and performed there by Olivier Beaumont. And after that, we heard La Lugeaque, which was a particularly attractive piece, actually, that Sophie, La Lugeaque. It's lovely.
Yes, to me, it really epitomises Balbâtre's talent for the common touch. It's such an attractive, rollicking jig, not the sort of piece we associate with the late 18th century French style at all. And apparently it was written for the handsome captain of the Mounted Grenadiers.
Let's talk a little more about Balbâtre's life. We've heard that he was obviously a jolly accomplished networker, but he in fact came from fairly ordinary beginnings, didn't he?
Yes, he was born in Dijon, as was Rameau.
And then, of course, he really did manage to mix with some dignitaries, didn't he? I mean, some of his pupils.
Yes, it was very important for a musician in 18th century France to have noble patrons and, well, ideally royal. Certainly, Madame Ducasse, the wife of the famous tulip collector, was both a pupil and patron.
And, of course, this was very much the world of the salon, wasn't it, which was a brilliant way for the nobility to sort of flex their cultural muscles and show all their friends how many artistic connections they had. Mind you, for all his success, the late 18th century must have been quite a frustrating time in some ways for a dedicated harpsichordist like Balbâtre, because the piano was now, you know, gaining in popularity. I wonder what he thought of that.
Yes, apparently he disliked it and said it would never dethrone the majestic harpsichord. At first he said that, and then changed his tune quite quickly afterwards, when it obviously was going to. Ever the businessman.
Let's hear some more harpsichord for now. This is Balbâtre's Sonata en Quatuor in D major. Thank you. Sonata en quatuor in D major by the 18th century French keyboard composer Claude Bénin Balbâtre. And I'm exploring his life and music today with my studio guest, the harpsichordist Sophie Yates. Sophie, I do think that Balbâtre must have been someone I would have enjoyed meeting. He was incredibly popular. I mean, there was this one story about they had to cancel a performance he was giving because of crowd control. It was a midnight mass and it was banned by the Archbishop because the cathedral was just too full. I'm sure all your concerts are like that, of course. But do you think you would have liked to have met him? I'm no doubt you would have had a lot to talk about when it came to harpsichords.
Absolutely. I would love to have played his own Rucker's harpsichord, which Bernie tells us was painted like the finest coach or snuffbox.
Lovely. And I think Bernie was really surprised to see the harpsichord painted inside and outside.
He was surprised to see it painted at all because, of course, English harpsichords of that day would have been veneered. So that would have been a complete sensation.
And Balbâtre was very much involved in the technical developments of the instrument. I think he had all sorts of ideas of new things you could do to get different sounds.
That's right. The invention of the peau de buffle is attributed to him. And the peau de buffle is an extra set of jacks, which instead of having their plectrum made of bird quill, they're made of a soft leather. So when they pluck the string, you get a beautifully soft and sweet sound. And this was kind of in competition with the upcoming piano, which was prized for being soft, funnily enough, at the time, and tender and delicate sounding. So this peau de buffle register was the harpsichord's last gasp, really, in competing with that. And it is an absolutely lovely sound. But it came slightly later than these pieces, so it's not actually appropriate for any of these pieces on this recording, unfortunately. He invented it slightly later.
Now, the last decade of the 18th century was, of course, a time of great turmoil for the French people. And it was also a difficult time, actually, for the organ, which was an instrument that was so much associated, of course, with religion and everything that implied. In fact, Balbâtre had the unenviable task at one point of having to decide which of the organs should be saved and which of them should be destroyed. It must have been absolutely ghastly because, of course, Balbâtre himself really did live right through the French Revolution and it affected him in lots of ways.
Yes, it certainly did. The noble and royal patrons that he had, which had been so important to him, became, of course, the absolute worst thing to have after the revolution. But Balbâtre was prepared for this because he did have this very popular style of writing. So it wasn't too much of a stretch for him to compose in a more popular style. And in fact, he did end up making a setting of the Marseillaise
by citizen Balbâtre.
Citoyen Balbâtre.
And I think it was described as arranged by citizen Balbâtre to the brave defenders of the French Republic in the year 1792. So he seems to have sort of grabbed the whole thing with both hands, or maybe that was just a bit in a more cynical way.
Well, I always do feel when I play that piece that it is very tongue-in-cheek. I can't help thinking that there's irony there.
We're going to hear Balbâtre's version of the Marseillaise in a moment, performed on the organ, and he gets some amazing effects, doesn't he?
Yes, including the canon effect of many notes being held down at once. Apparently, it was quite a common thing for organists to improvise on the idea of the Day of Judgment, and both Armand-Louis Couperin and Balbâtre did this, and they must have had ample opportunity to practice their effects like that.
This is the organist André Isoire.
Thank you.
Fugue en Duo, performed by organist André Issoire. And before that, we heard him with Marche de Marseillais, both by Balbâtre. Well, Sophie, we've just got time for one more piece, and it's performed by you. But before we hear it, let's talk a little about Balbâtre's legacy. I mean, what makes his music so important, do you think, today?
I think because he embodies the Rococo in it, all its frivolity and all its looking back and forward, really. It was a very interesting age, which is sometimes a bit unfairly written off because some of the pieces are frivolous. But actually, it is the connection between the Baroque and the classical periods. And it's very interesting to see that transition in his work.
And of course, after the revolution, you know, he found himself in a musical world where, would it be right, fair to say that melody and expression were now taking precedence in a way that was so different back in the old Baroque time?
Absolutely, but actually Balbâtre does write a good tune, as you'll hear in a few of these pieces. And yes, he could see what was coming, I think.
Not least the piano. Well, that's about it. Many thanks to my guest Sophie Yates for coming in today to talk about Balbâtre and your new CD. And in fact, we're going to hear another track from your recording to end the programme. Sophie, tell us about this last piece, because we've met the subject of it already, haven't we?
Yes, she was the wife of the famous tulip bulb collector, who apparently spent 30,000 livres on a single bulb. And it's marked Fièrement et Marqué and Animé.
La Ducasse from Claude Babatra's Pièce de Clavecin, played in that recording by Sophie Yates, who was Lucy Skeeping's guest in today's Early Music Show. The programme was produced by Sam Phillips. Well, stay with us on BBC Radio 3 for a prestigious visit to the Aldborough Festival in just a moment.
A front row seat at a live concert every night of the week. Radio 3, live in concert.
Murray Pariah and Bernard Haitink, the eagerly awaited London reunion of two musical giants. On the menu, the Schumann Piano Concerto alongside a symphony by Bruckner. You can hear it in Radio 3 Live in Concerts, Thursday night from 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And you can hear a performance of the Fourth Symphony by Brahms later this afternoon. It's given by the BBC Symphony Orchestra under their chief conductor Jerzy Bieloklawek. A full performance after the orchestra's helped Stephen Johnson take it to pieces in this week's edition of Discovering Music. That's at 5. But now, with the time at 2 o'clock, we have a whole concert for you, the Radio 3 Sunday Concert. Here's Louise Fryer.
This concert marks the opening of the 64th Aldborough Festival, and Simon Rattle, one-time artistic director, will be returning to the stage here at Snape Maltings for his first festival appearance for 20 years. There's no need to tell you the hall is full to bursting. And surrounded as we are by the Suffolk marshes with their abundant wildlife and sweeping skies, it seems highly appropriate that Simon Rattle is conducting the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra in two powerful works shot through with sounds of nature and a sense of the divine. Messiaens et expecto resurrectionem mortuorum, and I await the resurrection of the dead, and Mahler's Das Lied von der Erde, Songs of the Earth, his last work, featuring tonight the mezzo-soprano Magdalena Kozina and tenor Michael Schader. Messiaen's piece was commissioned in 1964 to commemorate the dead of the two world wars. It scored for wind, brass and percussion and was first performed in Sainte-Chapelle in Paris. The composer felt the building with its medieval stained glass windows offered the ideal environment because of the marriage of the colours of the timbre and sound complexes with the dazzlement of blues, reds, golds and violets. But I don't think Messiaen would have objected to a performance here in the Maltings, a great brick barn of a structure, as he also had much larger spaces in mind, suggesting performances in cathedrals and even in the open air on high mountains. He was inspired by the Mayan pyramids, temples of ancient Egypt, and by the writings of Thomas Aquinas on the resurrection. Each of the five movements is headed by a biblical quotation. The first is a cry from purgatory, expressed by the low brass and percussion. Out of the depths have I cried unto thee, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. The second comes from St. Paul. Christ being raised from the dead dieth no more. Death hath no more dominion over him. The third is from St. John. The hour is coming when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God. The fourth is found in various books in the Bible. They will be raised in glory with a new name, in the glad company of the morning stars, and with the acclamations of the sons of God. The final quotation comes from the book of Revelation, and I heard the voice of a great multitude. Well, I caught up with Simon Rattle after the rehearsal, and I asked him how it felt to be back at Snape for the first time in 2 decades.
Is it really 20 years? Certainly first time this century, it's ridiculous.
And has Aldborough stayed in your memory?
It is the most individual sound in England for me, the acoustic. It's always a magic place and it's a very, very special atmosphere. This one we all had always deep in our hearts, this place.
And you're reunited tonight with the CBSO.
Yeah, no, that's really, I mean, it's very touching. It's about to be the 20th anniversary of our hall in Birmingham on Sunday. That's also hard to believe. And it's been such a thrill to hear them just kind of getting better and better all the time. And particularly in this last time, they have a very special relationship with Andrus Nelson's, and I've heard a couple of concerts with them. And I just sat there with tears in my eyes to hear them playing so beautifully. Now, very special and sentimental for me, what can I say?
And then two major pieces, enormous works that you're performing in the concert.
Yes, I mean, two very, very special pieces with an enormously powerful, different type of impact. The Messiansic was one of the great unrehearsable pieces of all time. It really needs an audience to speak to. But there's nothing quite like either piece in all of music, in the monumentality of the Messian and the intimacy of the Mahler. And they're both looking to this idea of Ewig, what is beyond. Messian's extraordinary, multicolored Catholic view of the Book of Revelations, and Mahler's very, very personal view of everything coming in a circle. Very, very moving pieces.
Sir Simon Rattle, and here he comes to conduct the CBSO in the first of those pieces, at Expecto Resurrectionem Mortuorum by Olivier Messiaen.